are so simple in our particular lawsuit, they kind of illustrate how simple the issue is worldwide. In our suit, what we say is that in 1982, there was a written agreement. Written agreement between the Attorney General, William French Smith, and the CIA Chief, Bill Casey. And what they did was they redefined what an employee was. They said that if you are a pilot or a contractor or an informant for the CIA, you're not an employee. That was an important distinction because all through the Cold War, up till Watergate, CIA employees had regularly been engaged in the drug trade, gotten caught, referred to the, and yet there was no reference to these cases to the Department of Justice for prosecution. And the reason was because there was a kind of a handshake agreement for 22 years between 54 and 76 where they didn't have a duty to refer it to the Justice Department. Unfortunately, that violated the law. There was a committee that said this is basically, you know, a conspiracy to violate the laws involving all federal employees. You've got to stop it. So for 6 years, they did the okey-doke and pretended to follow it. And then in 82, they said, we know a way around it. And the way around it was this redefinition of employees I've just mentioned. And why did they have to redefine what an employee was? It was because the Reagan administration was in the saddle, and there was a region to invade, and that region was Central America. Just like in the past, there was a region to invade called Vietnam. And during that era, the opium came down to the hills and the heroin labs were sprouting all throughout that sector of the world. And the heroin came back on the plains with the bodies of the soldiers and played a key role in enslaving African American and other communities, primarily poor communities. And just like what the Brits did in China in the 19th century in the Opium Wars, where they had a product and they needed to get rid of it, and they did it to the people of China. It's an old story. It's a nasty story. And the difference is, it's done for world domination in terms of power and money. And the reason it's done is because the big dope dealers are where the money is, where the influence is. And they control, their influence controls the foreign policy of that region. And the CIA needs to curry favor with the powers of that region. And they play the role of the puppet master. I always say, and I mean it, I don't really care whether the CIA has its hands in the cocaine or not. Because what they do is a functional equivalent. They fold their arms, they look the other way, and it gets through unimpeded, and the people who are doing it effectively have protection by this sin of omission. So they can say their hands are clean, and yet, as a matter of policy, what they've done is create a situation in 1982 where they knew that tons and tons of cocaine was going to enter unimpeded into the United States. And that the demand side, which is the United States and Western Europe, was going to expand like nobody's business. And as a result, the price was going to plummet, and whole new sectors of the population were going to be enslaved. It's an old story. It's not a pretty story. The saddest part of this story, in a sense, is that they've admitted it. The agreement is there on the web. All you have to do is go to the CIA's own website at odci.org, and then you go into the publications sub-index. You look for the Contra story. It was released October 1998 by Inspector Frederick Hitz, and there it is. In paragraph 115, they say, oh, we don't care about, you know, ordinary narcotics trafficking. What we focus on is strategic narcotics trafficking, the kind of narcotics trafficking that affects the rise and fall of entire economies and governments. That's a paraphrase of their very words in the document. And this document also spells out exactly, with painful efficiency, just how this agreement was created, all the lawyers that were involved, all the people who looked the other way, all the people who clucked their tongues and did nothing. And that's paragraph 54. It's all right there. And unfortunately, this is the kind of issue that it's difficult to get traction on. And I think the reason why is because so many of us have felt like it's going to be very difficult to get the snowball down the hill and build up a wide constituency that's able to deal with these issues without paranoia, without fear, without calls for another 10 years of investigation. In other words, a constituency that's informed and ready for action. And so that's where people like Celi come in, Celi Castillo. That's where people like Donna Warren come in. People who have been out there fighting the fight one day at a time, going to audiences one day at a time, and building that base of a new community that is willing to move forward despite fear, despite the paranoia, despite the fear of being mocked, despite the fear of being laughed at, and saying, look, our 2 million brothers and sisters in jail is very, very important. But this is going to happen again and again and again until we take fundamental action against these intelligence agencies. And the final piece is that, yeah, we've got a class action suit going. And we'll be filing more suits similar to the tobacco suits, where we're going to be saying cocaine is like a contraband substance given the blind eye and the okay by the USA. And the government has to pay for all these illnesses and disease, just like the tobacco. But we're not the only class action lawsuit in town. There's the DEA, if you can believe it, filed its own class action against the CIA for its actions in Burma and its actions in Guatemala. Celi's been involved in that case. And the reason is the same. The DEA can't even make the busts because the CIA is hiding the identity of the traffickers or giving them the tip-off at appropriate times. So Celi's the man who was there on the ground at Ilopango when they were bringing the cocaine into by American planes in the 1980s. And it's people like Celi coming forward and people like Donna Warren, who lost a son to this madness, has been fighting to stop it, that can help bring this thing to closure. Thank you.
And once again, we'd like to acknowledge Bill Sipage. Lawyers, by definition, are very conservative, within the system legalist, and they take a stand against the CIA, as we saw what happened at Chrisick's Institute, who took a stand against the CIA, and in fact were sued out of existence by, I think it was the 7th District Federal Court that went against them for so-called filing a frivolous lawsuit against the CIA. So they really, he's putting his career and his law firm on the line, taking a stand against the CIA. I think it's also important not just to talk about the victories in terms of rolling back cocaine by putting a highlight, an emphasis, magnifying the CIA's role in bringing cocaine into the United States, but also for us to forecast. Basically, we're in a defensive or we're in a reactive mode. We're reacting to the cocaine epidemic that occurred from 1982 to 1994 through the exposés, through many books written on this topic and so forth. But, you know, capitalism never sleeps. Both on the legal oppression of humanity and the illegal oppression of humanity, they continue to work 24/7 to maximize profits, both legally and illegally. And so many of us are concerned with trying to forecast. Now we understand the nature of this beast, the nature of the CIA, to forecast what is their next move. Because I think it's very important to be proactive, not just reactive. And if you monitor popular literature, whether it's in Madison Avenue in terms of public relations and the whole image industry, you find that the so-called heroin look among models, the real kind of, used to be, when I was younger, there's a thing called the Twiggy look, the real skinny, gaunt, blonde hair, blue-eyed. But they got the same physical feature, but now it's got to call the heroin look. Dark eyes, gaunt face, looking like a heroin addict. That's considered trendy now. If you look in terms of the music industry, the use of heroin is being glamorified by heavy metal, rock, and people that are involved with what they call hate or race music. That's very trendy. If you look, for instance, at some of the statistics coming from the San Francisco General Hospital, there's been a radical increase and white upper-class youth being admitted for heroin overdose. What has occurred is that the marijuana fields in Mexico have been plowed under, and they've been replanted with poppy fields, so that the issue of moving heroin from Southeast Asia all the way to the United States is now not a major issue, because now you're getting pure heroin coming from Mexico into the United States. And among white upper middle class youth in Texas and Arizona and Colorado, that's the drug of choice. And all of us have been socialized not to put a needle in your arm because of the spread of AIDS and a whole kind of derelict look. But the heroin is so pure that it's what they call smokable heroin. And that's the most dangerous. And most of us have been raised, I know I've been raised, to smoke anything. I'll smoke a cigarette, smoke a joint, whatever, because the whole cigarette smoke, smoking is cool, putting a needle in your arm is negative. So what they've done is come up with a pure form of heroin, Mexican mud, is really big, especially among white upper middle class youth. But as with cocaine, it started with the rock entertainers in Hollywood. It filtered down as they became more marketing savvy and made it much cheaper per unit until it became a mass phenomenon among the African communities, the Native American communities, and the European communities. So it's very important for us to learn from the analysis being provided by these experts on what occurred with the cocaine epidemic to prepare ourselves for the heroin onslaught that's predicted for the year 2000 and onward with the growing of poppy fields in Mexico. So we'd like to bring up a comrade, a Latino brother, who's many times played different roles as an Italian, when he worked for DEA, as an undercover agent infiltrating the New York Mafia, also going into Central America to try to stop the flow of drugs. And his revelations and experiences in Central America taught him, which he wrote into a book called Powder Burns, that the United States is not only not serious about stopping the flow of drugs into the United States, but actually is involved with bringing C-40 cargo planes of cocaine into the United States. And he'll talk about that. So Daniel Castillo, can we give him a round of applause?
Well, I don't know where to start. I usually lecture for about an hour and a half, and I have a slideshow presentation and nice pictures and the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I'll try my best to try to touch up on what Mike and Bill said, and Don, about the drugs. I go back. I'm a Latino Chicano out of South Texas, and my first experience was in Vietnam. That's for the first time I saw a lot of my fellow soldiers lie low on drug addiction. A lot of them died. One third of all the soldiers that came back from Vietnam were heroin addicts. One out of three. 58,000. We lost 58,000 soldiers in Vietnam. When I went to the wall in 84 for the first time, to the Vietnam Memorial Wall, there were 58,000 names or so. And did you know that you can build two more walls of the people that came back and died? A lot of them died from suicide. They could not adjust to the world again. A lot of them suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. PTSD is known. They all died. And they were on borrowed time, as they say, like most junkies that we have in this country now. That was the first time I saw what drugs would do to a human being. And I remember there were times where I would find my body, a friend of mine laying down with a needle stuck in his arm in the boonies. So instead of letting him go home, reported as a junkie, I would have to shoot him in the chest twice with an AK-47 to say that he died a good hero. But those are the things that I saw. And I swear to God, I said, God help me. If I make it back from that war, I am going to be a federal narcotics agent and continue this war against the drug traffickers. But it was also there in Vietnam that I saw that the CIA was involved in smuggling heroin in body bags into the U.S. So see, the CIA has a history going back a long time where they've been involved in drug trafficking. We saw it in Afghanistan. We saw it in Salvador. We saw it in Mexico. And we're seeing it now in Colombia. So you see, it's not the first time. Now, let me tell you, I have a lot, talking about discrimination, talking about a little bit of everything, how the CIA works. I'm from South Texas. I was a police officer and a detective for 6 years before I went to the federal government. So my first assignment, being a Chicano from South Texas, where do you think they sent me? You can make it. You made it. You're going to New York City. As D-Don was saying, I walked in the New York DEA office, and there it was. I walked in with a cowboy head, cowboy boots. But as they say, if you made it in New York, you can make it anywhere. From there, I went down to Central America, where I worked hand in hand with the worst human rights violators in the face of the earth that were trained by the CIA. I worked in El Salvador with the death squads that were supported by the Central Intelligence Agency and the U.S. government. A while ago, I came in and I saw, talked to Maria, she's a Salvadorian over here. She was captured by the death squads. Luckily enough, she was able to make it and tell her story now. But the Central Intelligence Agency have strongly been involved in drug trafficking for many years. Not only that, they've been involved in money laundering and murder with relative at ease. Okay, Bill is saying over here that he's got the evidence. I just responded to the House Select Committee on Intelligence. I got a 24-page report. And the reason I was able to do this report because I kept journals. I got over 2,000 pictures. At the end of the day, I would go home and I would write down on my journal what happened. Right now, I can prove that the CIA was involved in 13 overt acts on drug trafficking that I witnessed, that I documented, that I took pictures of. I have them on 3 counts of murder. People that they killed. Now, I'm not talking about CIA assets. I am talking about CIA officials. That's why they never wanted me to go before the committee. And they contacted me and said, Cele, we want to interview you. I said, sure. But let me record the interview. Because that's the only way I'm going to be able to prove what I did say or I did not say. And they wouldn't allow that. So I was not interviewed by them. But if I had, I could very well prove that the Central Intelligence Agency is responsible for all the crack epidemics that we had in the 80s. I knew all the CIA agents that were down there flying. All the Contra assets that worked for the CIA were all documented in DEA files as drug traffickers. Yet the CIA was giving them U.S. visas to fly to the U.S. with drugs. Now, their mentality was very simple. Cele, what do you think you're doing reporting this to Washington that we're involved in drug trafficking and our people are involved? Hey, we own these countries. In El Salvador, they paid $1.5 million a day for the past 10 years to fight that war. They could have won that war a long time ago. But this is their mentality. We were building what was known as cocaine democracies. We were letting countries like El Salvador, the President Duarte and his son were heavily involved in drug trafficking. But it was okay. You know why? Because it was a democracy. Guatemala, the same thing. We had Vinicio Cerezo and his family heavily documented in DEA files as drug traffickers. But it was okay again. Why? Because it was a cocaine democracy. So, I just let you go and let you know that I will help Bill, whether I'll be a participant or an expert witness on the fact of what I know of what the CIA has been involved in drug trafficking. And like I said, this is going to be up. This is up, Mike, if I'm not mistaken, in your website. You can go up there and see it. And it's my response to a House Select Committee that just came out. I just did this. I just finished this 2 weeks ago. And what I did is I went back to my journals and got everything out that the CIA was involved in. And you know what? The difference between this and any other document that's out there? I have names of CIA officials that were involved in this atrocity. I have pictures of people that were tortured and murdered by the CIA in Central America. So a new law went into effect. They said, if anybody shows a picture of a CIA official, you automatically get 5 years in prison. And I really don't care, because we tried it every other way. So now the pictures will be up, and you will see for the first time faces of CIA officials that were involved in these atrocities. Thank you.
I've asked Shelley to talk about his direct experience. I've asked Shelley to talk about his direct experience with Bush and the Longapore Air Base and what he saw and what he confronted Bush with. It's a first-hand experience.
Okay, there's two things. We're talking about two different Bushes, the father and the son, which is the same thing. In January 14, 1986, I met George Bush, the father. I met him in Guatemala when he was coming in to, quote-unquote, bring in the first democracy into that country for many, many years. So I'm at the ambassador's residence, and he comes up to me and shakes my hand and smiles and says, what is your job description here? He says, well, I'm a DEA agent, and I conduct international narcotics investigations. But I'm also the agent that's in charge of El Salvador. And Mr. Vice President, there's something funny going on with the Contras at El Pango. He smiles, shakes my hand, doesn't say a word, and walks away. I knew then and there that he knew that his baby, that apparatus outside the CIA that was working drugs at Ilopango, that he knew about it. Now, let's go back to George W. Bush. This is a fact, but nobody wants to touch it. There's an individual by the name of Luis de la Garza. He's a big PRI guy in Dallas, Texas, PRI from the party in Mexico. Luis de la Garza has multi-million dollars investors from Guanajuato, Mexico. Who's from Guanajuato? Vicente Fox. Well, guess what? Mr. De La Garza owns Canal 45 TV station in Dallas, Texas. He used to be an announcer for the Texas Rangers. Okay, here comes the puzzle. So, in 1995, Mr. De La Garza's business was raided by the FBI and the DEA. They had a search warrant. To have a search warrant, you got to have probable cause. You got to have an affidavit, a sworn testimony saying that there were drugs there and a reliable informant was involved. They found a stolen car and some other stuff, maybe. Anyway, to make a long story short, Mr. De La Garza turns around in 1999 and holds a fundraiser for George W. Bush for $100,000. A few months ago, he held a fundraiser for George W. Bush for $1 million. George Bush promised him that he would be the brand new director of Hispanic Affairs at the White House. This is a guy who's a Mexican citizen who gets all the money from Mexico to support George W. Bush. Anywhere George W. Bush goes, there he is. And he just put Vicente Fox, who's a personal friend of Luis de la Garza, and George Bush together. Now, if you think the floodgates are open now, there ain't going to be no more gates. And guys, this is going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm going to tell you why. One out of four in the immediate family is now involved in using drugs or selling drugs. It is destroying the Latino community, the black community, all the minorities. Okay? One out of four. If I turn around, if I point to somebody, they're going to tell me right now that someone very close to them was involved, is arrested, is in jail or somewhere. 5 years ago, it was an uncle or a cousin that was involved. Now it's home. And when the father or the son or the daughter goes to jail, it doesn't only destroy that person, it destroys the family. That's why it's very important. You know, I don't care if I got 50 people here in the audience. If I educate you in what I just told you, you will turn around, get on the phone, or tell somebody else about it. But the CIA, this U.S. government is so corrupt, we got to put a stop to it. Whatever means. Because we tried it peacefully, and they laugh at us. And nobody cares. And ordinary American person is in denial. They don't want to hear about it. My daughter tells me, Dad, what do you care what's going on in Colombia? And, you know, we live in our own little world. You know, nobody's going to bother us until what? It hits home. And to tell you what, I'm an expert witness on informants, agents' procedures now. I testified before different trials all over the country for the defense. Out of maybe the 10 cases that worked, every single case I found government misconduct by the agents, perjury. What else? Informants, perjury. This agent's supposed to be going to jail, but guess what? They turn around and they cut a deal with the defendant. And that's it. It stops there. So we talked about police brutality a while ago. There's another kind of police brutality that people don't talk about. And it's what I just told you about. It's getting worse, guys. They're violating our civil liberties. They're taking it away from us. So if you know people, educate them. Guys, these are facts I'm telling you. They're not allegations. This is what really is happening. And look around you. What do we got? 50 people may be in here. Where's everybody else? Where's the Latino community? Everybody's got an agenda. That's fine. But they need to be educated, guys. You go home and you make your phone calls today and you tell them what's going on. Bill, I'll be speaking when? Do you know? I'll be speaking when? Do you know? At the Shadow Convention? At the?
You'll be probably around 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Wednesday? Tuesday. Tuesday at 1 o'clock.
Shadow Convention, Patriotic Hall.
Right.
And I'll show a slideshow presentation. Slideshow presentation's got the good, the bad, and the ugly. CIA agents' pictures. I will have people that were tortured. With case files, times, and dates, guys. For the first time ever. I'm taking a chance of going to jail. But you know what? Somebody's got to do it. Thank you.
I'm going to ask Shelley to relate one more experience he had of what he saw at Ilongabo Air Base.
Okay. At Ilopango, I had a source of information, a guy. This guy was a guy that worked at Ilopango Airport. This guy did all the flight plans for the contra pilots. And a flight plan, for you people who don't know, is a pilot that's going from Ilopango to Colombia, to the Bahamas, or anywhere. And he will make the flight plans, passports, how much fuel, passengers, and so forth. Drugs were leaving. Ilopango was like the O'Hare Airport. Massive kilos of cocaine was leaving Ilopango to the U.S. military bases, guys. Military bases in the U.S. They were flying this large quantity. That's why we had so many kilos of cocaine in the streets in the 80s. That's why we have more drugs than we ever had in the history. Why? And it wasn't to support the Contras, guys. Don't ever think that. It all went into Swiss bank accounts, where a lot of it was found. The guy who worked at Ilopango was who? Oliver North, Felix Rodriguez, Cubano. Oliver North, in 1994, ran for U.S. Senate. He wanted to be the vice president. In 1991, there's a DEA file on Oliver North for smuggling weapons into the Philippines. How can it be that this guy is running for a U.S. senator's position and be documented in DEA files as a trafficker? You know, this is where we've gotten to right now. Look at George W. Bush. I swear to God, the story I just told you about Mr. De La Garza, it's a fact. Narco News out of Mexico has the story. But guess what? Might be a little scared, because Guanajuato is where Fox is from. I don't know. Drugs were living in Ilopango. I saw the cases. I documented not only drugs. I'm talking about $5 million cash every week going to the Bahamas, going to Panama by these contra pilots. I got surveillance pictures. I got a lot of documentation. And to just end the whole thing, because it's very important for you to know, it's not only drug trafficking, but murders. I got a passport. I got two passports of two Mexicanas, and their father were murdered in Guatemala after they seized 3,000 kilos of cocaine. They were tortured. They were raped. And then they were, arms and legs were cut off. They were put in 55-gallon drums. They drilled holes into them, and they took them out to sea. Never to be found again. With the knowledge of the CIA. I can prove that. Because I have the passports. The original passports. So it's not only drug trafficking, money laundering, but murder. And I can prove that. Thank you.
We were sure from the beginning of this program that the panelists this evening, they're almost the best that you can find anywhere on the question of CIA drugs, U.S. government genocide against black and brown youths by bringing drugs into those communities. But as we promised at the beginning of this program, we're going to give a couple of minutes, about 3 to 5 minutes, to Sister Donna Warren, who is one of the lead plaintiffs in the case against the CIA on the matter of drugs.
Good evening. Thank you, Deli. I appreciate these few minutes to just let you know what it is that can be done. Our esteemed panelists have told you about the harms that have been done because of the CIA. Well, they really haven't told you about the harms that have been done in the South Central, and there's been very many of them. I went a little bit earlier today to an event that was an official DNC event. It was the Tavis Smalley gathering of celebrities and politicians. I went in there with my list, which I didn't bring that list tonight, but I did bring some more information for you. I went in there with a list that said, what are the real issues in South Central? Because that conference was sponsored by Microsoft, AT&T, the Census Bureau, and whatnot. And I figured they're not going to be talking about the real issues. I kind of wormed my way inside because there were thousands of people there. 99.9% African American. When I got in, surprisingly, a couple of people that I heard were talking about the issues. Nikki Giovanni believes that prisoners should be given the right to vote, and I do too. Lainey Grenier, who was Clinton's first choice for a attorney general position, was talking about the differences in the treatment of black and white and brown children, as Dee Don described to us a little bit earlier. And so I said, okay, why are all these people here? Well, I knew why they were here. Bread and circuses. That's what this country is all about. Then I come here, to tell you the truth, I expected to see this whole auditorium filled, because the real issues are being talked about at the People's Convention. My question, of course, I'm not going to let anybody get away with anything. You know, my question is, where is D2K, which I am supporting every single one of those issues? You know, I don't know. I wish that the room was filled. I hope that the 10 to 50,000 protesters who are coming to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is more than ready to maim, kill, and deprive people of their First Amendment rights. I hope that as a result of this convention, the two actually meet, and a little bit later, when the Democrats have left, we can give a people's convention that will represent our will, include our bring all the people of the United States, all the people of California, all the people whose issues this convention is addressing. And the reason I say that, I've got something for you tonight. Yes, I am the lead plaintiff of the class action lawsuit against the CIA and the Department of Justice. We filed the lawsuit March the 15th, 1999. My attorney is here. I am so happy to see him because he is very hard to catch up with, but I got him now. I got him now. And some other attorneys filed the report. Why did they file it? They filed it because the United States government knowingly and willingly allowed crack cocaine to come into my South Central community. And as a result of that, I don't have my beautiful son anymore. And I am as mad as hell. In Joey Patrick Warren's name, I am not going to back up off of this case. What can this case do? This case, now everyone talked about what the CIA has done. The CIA has been doing this for 50 years. The question is, what can we do to stop the CIA from doing this again? This class action lawsuit is a perfect mechanism to bring the CIA to its knees. We don't have any other mechanism to hold their feet to the fire, but we've got this one. I brought copies of the Standard Form 95, which is the tort claim against the CIA to file for damages. And some of you might say, well, you know, I don't know, have anybody in my family. Yes, you do. Crack cocaine has destroyed, and I will wrap it up. Crack cocaine has destroyed my family, my society, my community, my country. Every single one of you are part of my community and my country. And together with this class action lawsuit, and the tort claims have to be filed by October the 8th of this year, I put my name and address on there. I'm not only the lead plaintiff, I am the lead organizer of this class action lawsuit. I want you to take a copy, take it to your friends, have them fill it out yourself, and I'm going to give you a copy of this letter that we sent out to the municipalities. Why did we do that? Because the cities have been harmed by this crack cocaine and hospital costs and, believe it or not, police costs in the problems that have affected the community. Take one of those and write and call your city councilman, call your congressperson, especially call Julian Dixon, who is probably the biggest sellout that there is, and tell them that we will not stand for the government. And I'm hoping that bill will tell us what the government is trying to do. We will not stand for the government's sabotage of this class action lawsuit. Now, Deli is about to get me off, so I think I'll say good night. and it's really, really good seeing you here.
We also have summaries of the suit against the CIA, a one-pager with the facts. We also have the program for the protest by D2K, Dan, and People's Convention here also. It's a newsletter with every detailed action occurring in Los Angeles in the next 4 days. We're now open for questions from the floor. Go ahead.